Atlanta Tennis Podcast. Every episode is titled, It Starts With Tennis, and goes from there. We talk with coaches, club managers, industry business professionals, technology experts, and anyone else we find interesting. We want to have a conversation as long as it starts with tennis.
Hey, hey, this is Sean with the Atlanta Tennis Podcast, powered by Go Tennis. While you're here, please hit that follow button. And after you listen, please share with your friends and teammates. Also, let us know if you have questions or topics you would like us to discuss, and we will add them to our schedule. With that said, let's get started with 10 Minutes of Tennis.
Good morning. We have Justin Yeo, world-renowned tennis coach in Australia. Wait, Aussie in Australia is what I'm supposed to say. And we will enjoy his t-shirt without mentioning it. So we appreciate you being here this morning. We also have a special guest star, which that phrase I think is usually reserved for musicians. And no, it's not that Dave Matthews. We have the actual Dave Matthews with us, who next time we'll get him maybe his bike friendly Atlanta background. Like I've got my Go Tennis background. We'll talk to creative. That's what they call it these days. We'll talk to creative about that, Dave. But first, what I want to do, Justin, is I want to recap, because this is a follow-up conversation. There's a follow-up conversation from our What to Change After 40 initial conversation. And I want you, if you don't mind, give us a quick recap. Keep it 90 seconds, if you can, to what we were talking about. What do we mean by what to change after 40 when it comes to tennis?
I think what we were talking about is making sure you know where your limitations are and trying to become more, I guess, what we call efficient in your swing. And so not trying to hit the ball the same as you were in your 20s and make some adjustments. And you can do that just even staying within your own swing, but just being a little more mechanically minded, I guess is the word, or biomechanically minded, if we want to speak it that way. But I see a lot of guys over 40 struggling on serve, struggling on forehand, struggling on ready stance. There's a whole bunch of things that they start to lose as they get older because of posture. And so over 40, focus on mobility, focus on agility, focus on taking care of your body, and then and make some adjustments in your swing is the quickest way I can tell you. So, you know, internal rotation of the shoulder, stop coming all the way back here, make it a little shorter and compact, and you'll be amazed how much harder you can still hit the ball. You know, so just be a little more, I guess the word is compact, and understand your limitations after 40.
Understand your limitations. I like that a lot. That's why I see you see the older players kind of just bring the arm up and take a quick serve and just get the point started, because they're not necessarily coming in hitting aces anymore. It's that there's a humility that comes with aging. Dave, stop. Stop. Just because you're a terrible example of these things, I don't appreciate that. So,
Tommy Haas is on Instagram lately showing like at 45 cracking the ball, but he really only goes about two steps this way and two steps that way. He's not really moving.
That's what I heard about the same thing with Carlos Alcaraz and hitting with Juan Carlos Ferreira.
Yeah.
Ferreira can still hit with Alcaraz as long as he doesn't have to go to the other side of the court.
And he's, if you see him hitting, he's a little more compact on both sides. He doesn't get as much rotation as he does, but he still can crank the ball. You see Agassi doing the same thing, right? He can just stand there in one spot, just going bang, 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 like table tennis. But as soon as you keep the move,
there's a humility to it. And that's when I want to next go to Dave and say, okay, Dave, you got a couple of years on us. I say couple, huh? Got a few years on us. And I want to ask it's the next question that says, okay, if I'm 45, I'm actually 46, Justin's 50. If you're 60, you've had that experience of being through your 50s. What have you had to change even further? Is there more humility that says, okay, I'm a little bit older, and I will point out that you're a terrible example of this being some superhero tennis player, but as the example of how do you make that adjustment into your 50s after your 40s?
Yeah, I agree. I've done things probably wacko different than most people. But, you know, like Justin said, taking care of your body, you know, as well as anybody, I'm an icing freak. You know, not too many people have, you know, 15 blue ice packs in their freezer waiting to come home every night. And just because of teaching, you put them on your legs so that you hopefully survive longer. You know, and this is a, like somebody says, a lot of times in tennis, it's not a sprint. You know, it's a long, drawn out 2-3 hour match. It's got a lot of twists and turns in it. But anyway, you know, getting over 50 and still playing, I was still playing double A1 tennis. One of my great partners, Scott Lindsay, you know, I tell people all the time, he carried me all the time, and he'll, you know, he's a great guy. He's going to say, no, I didn't. You know, your serve was doing pretty well. I said, yeah, at 52, I was doing pretty well. You know, still playing national, international events. But at 50, I started, I didn't really notice it, because the one thing I will say going through 40 to 50, if you're still very active playing wise, you don't lose that much. I didn't. Now, like you said, maybe that's just a rare case, but most people don't live in a tennis environment like I do. They work 9 to 5. They have kids and family, and I get it. That's all part of the mix. I did the same thing, but I still played international events. So losing it, you know, the old adage, if you don't use it, you lose it. It is true. It is true. Be forewarned, when you stop using it, you know, on a weekly basis, you're going to lose it, and lose parts of it slowly but surely. It gets in there. So anyway, but, you know, last 5 to 7 years, when I was going, you know, through another period of my life, I have learned that, you know, over 60, you better get ready, because what you have lost, gaining it back is a ginormous change. It's, you get, you're talking about humility. It's crazy. But back to what Justin was saying about your mobility, oh, it even dominoes. It dominoes again. I mean, I remember when I was in my college years, and I'd get up in the middle of no man's land. People, oh, you got to close the net. I said, just listen, I'm working on my 80 and over game. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I go, I played with people that were 70 and 80 years old when I was young, and they stand in the middle of no man's land. I know why now. And I used to laugh at it, but hey, I'm there. And, you know, things you change. I hit drop shots a lot more, because I know everybody on my court playing in the super seniors now at 65 and over, everybody's mobility is challenged. Everybody's. So it's another game. You start, like Justin says, you make amendments to your strokes. You make them a little shorter. You know, as long as you're hitting a lot, you still got some muscle strength to help support the racket. The rackets now do a lot more than what we grew up with. So don't push it, use it, you know. And we know as well as anybody, people don't learn to use the racket like they should. They want to use that brute strength, that ego. I call it the ego. You know, ego comes in, want a basketball. Dude, you could cut your swing down 25% and hit the same ball. But as you get older, you don't have that option. Your body starts going, oh, my God, I think I just tore my rotator cuff hitting a forehand. I mean, what are you doing? You got to cut it down a little smaller, you know, like Justin says. You got to cut your stroke a little and use the strength you have to reproduce the same ball that is in play. Does that make sense?
So there's a humility there. Now, how much different did you see? And you say that it's that daily, if you're playing tennis daily, let's say the normal tennis player, the average tennis player is playing once, maybe they average 1.5 times a week.
Yeah.
It's probably an average. Maybe they get in a practice. It's not like you or Justin, where you're on court, potentially getting a chance to hit balls, not like me bouncing a orange dot ball to kids. Right. But you're hitting real tennis balls, and you're getting to feel that, and you don't really lose it. For me, I took 3 years off from playing tennis, and it's gone. Everything I got is gone. And all I had was those cool things that I could do. There's no way I'm going to beat Justin head to head. I'm hitting 97 drop shots and just hoping that he breaks his ankle so I can win this match. But I'm gonna make some changes trying to get it back and saying, okay, Justin and I talked about the different types of serve. Is it possible, Justin, maybe the serve that I had no longer is the serve that I need? Yeah. And now as I pass that 40 into 50, and there's a humility there, Justin, that you agree with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't believe in kind of teaching old dog new tricks. I mean, you can teach a dog to do new tricks in a different way within what they already know. And that's why I keep saying you can keep playing. You just can't keep playing the way you were in your 20s, you know. And if you can let go of that, you actually can still keep playing. And another really cool stat or help on all of this is Vic Braden, one of the most biggest legends ever of this game. And I wouldn't say necessarily playing wise, but his knowledge and what he did for the sport is off the charts. And one of the things he really showed is that because of the speed between racket to racket in the last three generations, there's just no way a player can get from the baseline to a service line without having to hit another ball. You just can't get past. So if everyone said close it down, I'm like, what are you talking about, man? You gotta be Carl Lewis and be quick enough to get past from the baseline to service line and still nail a volley. So
was he the one that said you get two steps? You'd hit the serve, two steps, and then you hit the next ball, two steps. Was that Vic Braden?
He was, yes. And he was also one of the first guys that said we have to scrap the split step. We have to create the reaction step, which is 1 foot, then the next foot, or 1 foot, then the next foot. So you never split step and then move to the volley. You actually split with 1 foot and move to another foot. So then you're always two steps ahead. And he proved if you practice that enough, your split step becomes one leg and then push to this where you see it. But you're now two steps ahead when you make contact. And he was saying that's the only way we're going to get to the net with the speed between racket to racket now. And that's even in the amateur level. Because what we have to understand, amateur level, professional level, the pros just process the ball and process, and you know, like know what's going to happen quicker than what an amateur does. So it's the same stuff. It's just you just can't get to the net fast enough. So in the 70s and 80s, the guys that had it right, you hit a ball, stationary, hit another ball, stationary, hit another ball. You can do that, but you can do it. If you can do it on one leg and start doing it like Vic was talking about, you can get even further in. But, you know, again, know your limitations. Know that you can adjust the game a little bit and still keep playing, you know. And I think what Dave brought up, a really good point, is that usually there are other guys at the other end with the same limitation. So, you know, just know what you can play against his limitations. Like, you know, so, you know, if he's not a good mover, well, he's going to get a lot of drop shots at him. But you'll find that guy probably stands three-quarter court most of the match.
he's already in no man's land. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Our 10 minutes are up, Justin. Let's go. Let's go long term. So we're gonna say thank you, Dave, Justin, to our 10 minutes of tennis. We will continue on Instagram and YouTube for the longer conversation. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Cheers, man.
Thank you.
Cheers, Atlanta.
Cheers.
All right, so now we're just running YouTube and Instagram. So I like that. I like that conversation about the, like what you said, Dave, about the hanging out in no man's land, where you see in the beginning, you, as coaches, we say, no, there's a reason it's called that. Get out of there. The ball's going to bounce at your feet. But if you're only realizing you're getting two steps anyway,
yeah,
that guy in his 60s that I was trying not to lose to when I was in my 20s, that's just hitting half volleys the whole match.
Right.
If you can't hit around him, then that's what he's trying to force you to do. You have to go around that guy to make him move. Then I hit the ball out. Right. So that more experienced player can take down a younger player at the time, which I'm realizing, I'm calling it a humility, where it's basically where I'm finding the positive thing to say, as opposed to Dave, where he says the problem is the ego, which is the opposite of humility. So that works. To say, okay, now, Dave, if I'm going to say, here's our longer conversation. If you can give me you can give me three things that you would suggest, say actionable points of view that say, here's what you can change. Is it switching to an adjusted, abbreviated, sorry, that's the word, Justin, for the serve, an abbreviated serve, or maybe you do serve and volley more, even though it's not really what you used to do. Do you have three things you can give us that say, here are actually some things you can change?
Yeah, I think, you know, like, I think me and Justin are on the same page with it. You know, when you start abbreviating, and at the same time, as you incorporate better returns to serve and things like that in a younger person's game, you know, 30, 20, 30, 40 year old, you have to learn to shorten your stroke, because the time there is just not there. You know, you can scream. Like I had a conversation. I remember when I was first coaching Alta here in Atlanta, I kept telling people, you know, you're coming to the net, if you want to serve and volley, you're coming to the net, and they're thinking, well, I'm going to get to the middle of the service block. And I'm like, on what train? What train are you getting there on? Because I ain't never got there. And I'm 6'5", so we that don't work. And so it's funny, because I came home that night, and I think Edberg was on the TV, like U.S. Open late at night, and I counted like 12 points in a row. He served, you know, like a long game, and he, you know, he's volleying every point, serving and volleying, and 9 out of 10 of his first volleys were within the service line and a yard behind it. Yep. His first volley. And so I counted. Well, I called the guy up on the phone and I said, okay, turn on this match. It's on right now. Watch. And, you know, he's watching. His wife goes, this can't be right. I said, it's right 100% of the time. You're not watching what you think. You're seeing his second volley. That's a whole nother game. But if that first volley is not on point into a deep corner, your second volley ain't going to exist. You're going to get passed in a heartbeat. Justin's over there shaking his head going, yep, we've all seen that one. And so, you know, I tell people all the time, you're coming in, but you really, if you watch the pros warm up their volleys, they're all standing on the service line, because that's the most important volley. The rest of them are cheesecake. That's a joke when you get up in the middle of the service block. And I tell people all the time, well, you're a serving volley. And I go, if I get past middle of the service block and haven't won the point, I haven't done my job. My volleys really stink. And so I realized where in the court I am, you can't just fly to the net. You're going to get lobbed by everybody on the other side of the net. You know, Justin going, yep, yep. And so, you know, changing, I think moving, you know, because your mobility does become a little bit of a factor. If you're going to go to the net, which is still a viable play for me and anybody, you just got to be realistic with your movement. You know, your movement is not going to stay at 40 years old anymore. It's over. So learning how to half volley, which is what I've been doing for, oh my God, 45 years. You know, I can take a half volley and hit a drop half volley off of it with touch. And, you know, people don't like a 6'5 guy doing that, but sorry, I've been ahead of the curve a little bit. But, you know, that I think is one, because you've been cutting down your return to serve stroke, because of lack of time with the bigger players, or, you know, the bigger ball that you're hitting, you should be adapted to be able to step into the court, take serves earlier, and just get them at their feet. And you're already in the court, so you might as well just come on in and make it fun. You're going to get to every ball? No. But you learn how to read players, and that's the evolution of tennis, is as you read players and you read shot selection and what you minimize on the other side because of your shot, that becomes even more of a chess match and fun part of the game to me. Justin, you got anything to add there?
I'd say two things. You become an expert at 0 to 4 shots, and you also have a very good reminder, which everyone seems to forget, is read the other player's racket. Read the racket before the ball. I mean, anything that can speed up perception so that you can actually use whatever mobility you do have and reaction that you do have. Everyone forgets to read the racket. I mean, I'm constantly showing up and like, just watch my racket. Just watch. All of a sudden, they're split steps faster. They're coming forward. They're seeing the left, the right. They're seeing everything. It's like, hey, like I said, you think you're watching, but really you're just watching the ball. And by the time it gets to the net, you're now reacting. So let's watch the racket. And the more you watch the racket, the better you'll become. So that, they'd be my two biggest ones for anyone over 40 and over 50 is keep remembering to watch the racket and try to 0 to 4 shots. Be like, what am I creating? You know, right. we're playing beards, but we're playing beards to 4, not playing beards to 8. You know, so.
And that makes a lot of sense, knowing we're also playing a lot more doubles as we get older.
Yeah, now, I mean, even
come
even
from that. That Atlanta mindset typically, which there's a lot of doubles here anyway, because there are more leagues than anywhere in the world. But we come from that point of view of, okay, now I'm getting older. I got to get smarter. I'm going to hit my serve. I have lost a match to that guy who tapped in the serve and sprinted to the net. I mean, it was a city final match. It was embarrassing. I couldn't figure out how to beat that guy. So there are those strange scenarios where it somehow works. But as we get older, as we realize that, we've got to learn how to half volley. I like that, Dave. Take some practice time and spend some time in no man's land and call up Justin or Dave and say, hey, I need to work on my oh shit shots, right? I got to work on that. That ball's at my feet. What am I going to do? Get comfortable with those shots that you're typically avoiding, because now we don't have the footwork to necessarily get out of the way and get back in the way and make those adjustments.
And if you're going to keep, my third one is, if you're going to keep something to your 70s and your 80s, don't lose your squat. I mean, it's just incredible when someone gets their good squat stance and good, like, I'll give you one more, actually. There's one more really important one. This is one that's a big one for everybody. Your hip width. The amount of people that continue to feel like they've got to be Djokovic. And your hips are limited as you get older. They have to, your stance has to be more narrow for you to be able to use your feet and your legs again. And if you keep, if you were here in your 20s and you're here in your 30s, you're about here in your 40s. And then 50s, well, maybe around the same, but don't be out here in your 40s and 50s. There's just no way you're going to react or move or do it. And that's probably why you're slow. It's not that you can't move. It's just your hips. They lose their mobility, so your stance becomes more narrow. And that's one I pick up on a lot of people. I say, look, put your feet together, jump in the air and land. Okay, that's where you, that's your hips right there. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, but I'm here. I'm like, no, you can't move there.
And it's another example of, and I'll take that and specify the advice, stop watching the guys on television and thinking you can do it. You're not them. Yeah. Right. Wow. Don't come in and hit that volley where the racket moves all the way. You don't have that. When we say don't swing at your volleys, we mean it. Don't say, but Roger Federer does it. Or the, what's the big wide, like you said, the Djokovic split step return to serve. You're not them, right? Talk to your coach, find out who you really are, and actually realize the humility and saying, here's where, maintain this lane. This is where you need to be. I got one last question, Dave. You're an avid cyclist. That's theoretically bad for a tennis player with the hips, going from the hips from Justin to where, okay, I'm on this bicycle and I'm doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm hearing different things. So I want to ask the question of how you believe the cycling helps you besides just fitness, and fitness is good. It keeps you healthy, keeps you fit. As long as you don't die. So please don't die riding a bicycle on the road. Please, I'm asking you, Dave, please don't do that. But that repetitive movement on the bicycle, Justin talks about how we're sitting and how our angle is and how that helps us as tennis players. And sometimes it can be a detriment. How do you combine still continuing tennis with the cycling when I'm getting some advice that maybe we shouldn't do that, or maybe everybody shouldn't do that?
Yeah, right. Number one, and I was going to add on, Justin had 4 fingers over there, and I'm going to add a fifth one. As you go through your 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, because I remember one year back when I was like 40, 35, 40, I went to the National Intersectionals out in Arizona. Had all the, you know, sections represented, 13 sections represented, you know, a team competition. And they started doing testing people versus, you know, not really versus each other, but they started doing testing to see, you know, when you got to be 40, what was your, you know, how was your stretching? You know, could you touch your toes? Could you, your jumping and things like that? And I was off the chart. because I don't know why, but I was cycling a lot. My quad strength was phenomenal. You know, they had where you're sitting on the floor and you reach out over your toes, you know, and you try. And so everybody was reaching their toes. And I was like a wrist past my toes. And people were like, what in the world? And I said, I do a lot of stretching and I do a lot of stamina work on my bike. And they were like, whoa. And, you know, I had a friend of mine when I was in college on my 1 year of college basketball that I played. We went and visited one of his friends, Tree Rollins, of the Atlanta Hawks, who was having knee surgery down in Columbus, where I grew up. And Dr. Houston walked in. Houston Clinic was the name of the clinic. He was a world-renowned knee surgeon. I don't know if he still is. But anyway, Tree had just had knee surgery that afternoon before at like 4 PM. And the next morning, Dr. Houston walks in with a exercise bike. And Tree was like, Doc, I need some pain meds, la, 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 la. He goes, get your butt out of bed and get on the bike. You're trying to get back in the lineup, get on the bike. And I said, so I got a question for you. What if you got on the bike before you came to see you? He goes, probably wouldn't be here, because the quad and the bicycle builds the quad better than anything to support the knee. That's what we lack and why so many people have knee surgeries. And so you think about the pounding that we get on a tennis court, and it's unbelievable. I mean, starting and stopping, oh my God. And so what I decided at about the age of about 22 or 3 was to stop doing all my running and start cycling so that I take the pounding off, but I build the muscle without the pounding. I get my heart strong. Life hopefully gets longer. And yeah, you know, and that's what my nonprofit does now, is we're trying to create safer streets for everybody. But yeah, you know, people need to drive a little better. I hate to say it, but you know, I've never seen a bicycle that kills somebody. So, you know, we have to attack the root of the problem, and that is the killing machine and the ego behind it. And so, you know, I don't know how we're going to address all that. There's a lot of stuff in our society we need to change and fix. That's one of them, one of many, as roads get, you know. But, you know, stretching is a huge part. I've started the last 2 months ago, I started a medicine ball workout where there's also a lot of yoga kind of stretches with a lightweight medicine ball. It's killing me because of the, you know, once you're over 60, you start losing muscle mass, whether you like it or not. And if you ain't doing something to fix it or to help it stay in position, you know, like you got it, you're going to lose it. So, you know, all you 50-year-olds, get ready. The ladder's coming your way and you better not get on it. So stretching is a big part of it, big part of it.
Justin?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's pretty impressive for a 6 foot guy to put his hand past his foot.
Yeah.
I can't even reach my foot. So, but I did, I mean, I was doing close to 100 miles a week in running, and I quit all of that.
Yeah.
For the sake of tennis, for the sake of it's running. Running will destroy your tennis because you just tighten your hammies and your hammies can't give for anything. So, and you can't sprint and you can't use your fast twitch fibers. And there's just so many lists. So running, long distance running and that, I mean, any kind of running. He's right with jarring. You can build your legs by doing the bike. But you know, again, same thing. It's helped for him. And what's work, if it works for you, I say go for it, you know. I could see the benefit for a 6'5" guy on a bike. It would actually help him with his squat stance.
Yep.
So I could see that we actually would help. But a guy who's maybe 5'11" might be a bit too tight and too round over. And I've seen both sides. So the bike stuff, I've seen people on Pelotons every single day. And they can't react around the court because, again, slow twitch versus fast twitch. And they lose a little bit of their deep squat. So they lose their hip range because they're used to just this far. So again, it's weigh it all up. What's benefiting you and what's not benefiting you? You know, because some people don't. I don't do much static stretching. I do a lot of dynamic stretching. I find static, one, it's boring, and two, I feel like I hurt things. So, you know,
sure.
you do what you know, and you know, I've seen people go into yoga and go, oh man, $30 million. And then next thing you know, they're like, oh, I just tore something. It's like, okay, because you pulled something to do something it's not used to doing. So it's, right.
Well, and I'll toot my wife's horn a little bit and say, that's, I think, why we invented Pilates. And especially as we age, I call it the workout version of yoga. Yeah. To where it sounds like what Dave, you're describing with your medicine ball, it sounds like a bit essentially as a Pilates workout, which we're protecting the feet, we're staying aligned, we're staying moved. It isn't just yoga where I'm trying to hold my antenna. You know, yoga was designed to connect the human body with the vibrations of the universe and center and meditate. That's a different concept where Pilates is going to take you and say, hey, you know what? If you're doing a lot of cycling and you're doing this one thing, my wife is going to say, well, how about we do some hip circles? And how about we extend those things and we work on those squats and we add that in as one of the things that you're doing? In the same way, I just bought my little magnetic bracelet to lose a few pounds, right? And they say it can't be the only part of your weight loss program. I'm like, does anybody think the wristband is going to help me? No, it's a talisman. There you go, right? It's a talisman. It's the thing that reminds you to stop eating too much and go work out and do your thing. But it's one of many things that we need to do. And if we're playing tennis, you get out there and you hit some balls and that's good for you. Justin wants the fast twitch. He's going to say, hey, this, you know, man cannot live on cycling alone. Yep. And Dave, I will say, man sometimes die from cycling alone. So be careful out there on the roads. Gentlemen, I'm out of time. I appreciate it. We'll follow up. Maybe we'll do a what to change after 60 in a few months. But I appreciate your time, guys. Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
Well, there you have it. We want to thank Rejuvenate.com for use of the studio. And be sure to hit that follow button. For more tennis-related content, you can go to AtlantaTennisPodcast.com. And while you're there, check out our calendar of tennis events, the best deals on Technifiber products, tennis apparel, and more. If you're a coach, director of any racket sports, or just someone who wants to utilize our online shop, contact us about setting up your own shop collection to offer your branded merchandise to the Atlanta tennis world. And with that, we're out. See you next time.